Middle market deals take time. Okay. You need to start building a real pipeline early. And that means that when, you know, in those first 6 months, you might not sell anything.
Welcome to the Insurance Producers Podcast, where we bring you the top personalized producers, insurance agents, and industry partners, giving you at least three takeaways to 10x your production and build your multi-million dollar revenue books. So sit back, relax, and become inspired by the success stories and strategies of the world's top insurance minds. Let's roll.
All right. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Insurance Producers Podcast. Hey, man, I've got a special guest today. We are going to try to keep this episode as clean as possible, but knowing Francisco, I don't know if we're going to keep it too clean, but we'll get it rocking and rolling. Well, hey, man. So, I'm excited, man. I've got Francisco Saldana from Regional President InZone Insurance. We're going to talk some middle market stuff that we have never talked in this episode, but I don't want to take a thunder, man. Francisco, what's happening?
Everything's good, man. I appreciate you having me. I know we've gone a little back and forth here trying to make this work. You're busier than I am, but I'm glad that we were able to get it on the calendar.
I don't know about that, man. This is the only guy I know that like flies to three different states within like 3 to 4 days and still able to get everything done, man. The amount of traveling you do is absolutely crazy. I know he stole a couple of my Marriott nights to get to his platinum level. We'll talk about that. Or titanium level, whatever. We'll talk about that.
Keep it going.
That's awesome, man. Francisco, man. Okay, so the people that don't know you, man, give me a couple of minutes of like, just what's the background look like? How did you get into the insurance industry? And then we'll get rock and rolling.
Sure. So, like you said, so current role is regional president at InZone. We say Midwest, but I think we're up to 14 states, a few hundred employees. Originally by trade, I'm a sales guy that ended up finding insurance. I don't think any of us really end up here on purpose, right? So I was recruited into the industry by Marshberry. So shout out to them. Great shop. Brought me into a lower middle market shop in Miami and started there. I spent about a year over there working as a commercial lines producer, doing like lower middle market stuff, right? So it was a lot of nonprofits, schools, museums, that type of thing. And it was good, you know, but I always knew that I wanted to go a little bit further upstream. So then I was recruited over to USI out of the Miami office, spent 2 years there doing middle market, focusing on waste and recycling contractors, built up a nice book in 2 years, $700,000-$800,000 in revenue, then got brought up to run the Miami market for them, grew that shop. And then for the last few years of my career over there, I ran the Southeast. So that was Florida, Alabama, Tennessee, Mississippi. Thankfully I, after a good run, I had an opportunity to come over to InZone. And, now to your point, I live, in the American Airlines terminal for DFW and, in, numerous and various Marriott hotels throughout the country.
Dude, that's wild. Love it, man. It's funny, man. You're talking about how, oh yeah, I just built a small $700,000-$800,000 revenue book in a couple of years, you know, like to a lot of personal lines agents and me like listening to it. I'm like, oh yeah, that's very, 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 very elite level. But you're talking with different numbers, man. And that's what I'm excited to talk about, man. Your journey has been just been phenomenal, man. So my first question for you would be from a commercial lines producer, what made you? I know Marshberry brought you to obviously the commercial side of things, but like what made you stay there? Like, what did you like about doing the middle market and the ones that you got to start with right under the middle market, the lower middle market?
So, look, it's a good question, right? So, first of all, I enjoy it. I feel like it's you're really solving a problem, right? I think as you kind of go downstream, the carriers tend to dictate what the rate's going to be, what the coverage is going to be. And it's really a matter of, do you have access? And it's a thumbs up or a thumbs down. Once you start going into middle market, you got to get creative with this stuff, right? I mean, I mentioned I was doing waste and recycling. And look, when you've got, you know, a few tons of steel driving around suburbia, making multiple stops, the nuance matters, right? Yes, how many units, you know, how many employees, how much revenue, all that stuff still counts, but they want to know more, right? The underwriters really want to get to know the account. What are their safety processes like? What are the recruiting processes like? So it gives you the ability really to work in tandem in a true partnership with your insurance buyer to really sell them better. And look, not to mention the obvious, right? It's a heck of a lot better to win a client that produces you $50,000-$60,000 in revenue than it is, you know, for a producer anyway, to have 20 of them that equal the same amount. And look, debatable, right? When you lose a big one, it hurts more, but it allows you to really spend more time and take care of the client better, if I'm being honest. But it's been a great run. You know, now it's a little bit different, right? Obviously, like you mentioned, you know, being at InZone, our focus is really the bread and butter of America that's been ignored for a long time. That Main Street business that hasn't had the same level of care, attention, and, you know, and detail, frankly, from the bigger shops. But yeah, man, a dozen years of middle market, it's tough to get away from it.
Yeah. What's been, I guess, yeah. So now you essentially been a producer for a long time and then obviously led some teams, but this is probably the first time where like 400 people are reporting to you in some capacity, right? So like, what was the biggest challenge when you left like the commercial producer side of things and started like managing people? Maybe it was 50 people at first and now it's 400 people. What's been the biggest change and how are you handling it?
So look, when I first started managing people in insurance, the Miami office over at my last shop probably had 4 or 5 producers. So, and they were all, not all, but mostly retired in place. I think we all know that type. So the biggest thing was recruiting to start. You got to build your own team, right? Number one. Number two, accepting the fact that not every producer is going to do it the way that I would have done it. And appreciating that fact, because I think it's easy to say, you know, why don't they do it the right way? But if there was a right way and if everyone did it that way, then you and I would not be necessary, right? So I'll be the second thing. And lastly, you know, it takes some time to change your mindset. When we're producers, we love our win. I want the medal. I want to be the one that brought it home. And it's a bit of a mental shift to be as happy or more so for your team when they win. And the same thing when they lose an account, right? So it took a little bit, but you know, at the end of the day, it's still a team. When you're a producer, you have your account managers, you have your account executive, you have your carrier partners, you got resources that might be helping you. It's just a matter of a different type of team. But yeah, it went from a few producers in Miami and now right around 400 people over 14 states. And it's, you know, it's a different animal at this point.
Yeah. So I think one of the most, I mean, we've had over 100 people in the organization, a lot of independent contractors, 25 employees was the max we've ever had. So what I remember was when it was 2 or 3 employees and you're kind of in the meat, you're kind of in the grind with them, like on a daily basis, like you're talking to them, right? On a daily, it's easy to obviously encourage them, right? It's easy to be with them. It's easy to motivate them. It's easy to be in their world. As you, now, even with 25 employees, W-2 employees, it gets really difficult to be in front of every one of those, right? So for people that, for the audience that are listening, man, that are having a hard time with the growing teams that they're having, the agency owners, the producers now that may have people underneath them, what would be a piece of advice for you for those people, man, that are managing more people that they can't touch base with every person anymore, right? Like, what would you recommend they do?
So, okay, great question, because I think the messaging gets diluted the larger that you get. That being said, there's a few things that I think if you stick to them, that you can continue that level of motivation, even if it's through other people, right? So I think it starts with one thing, and that's clarity, right? People, slogans are great, right? But they don't really fire up people long term. That's a momentary thing of that rah-rah moment, right? So I think people get really fired up when they understand that there's a target, what that target is, the standard that we're expecting. And I think the most important part, which I think people miss the most, is what's the path to be able to get there, right? Because as an agency, you know, we know what we all care about, right? It's organic growth. But that doesn't mean anything to a team member, right? So a big part of my job is really simplifying what that mission is to every producer, to every account manager, to every leader, right, on how to win. So that's, I think that's first and foremost. Now, second, I have to be the one to set the tone. And I'm big on that because, you know, we always joke around about the energy, right? And if you have good energy at the top, then that water falls down, right? If I show up, you know, confident and committed to the team, then the region's going to follow along. So that motivation, I think, is really contagious when it's consistent, right? And I would say, lastly, it's really you've got to keep connected to the results, right? The first time I walked into your shop, one of the things that I loved was your scoreboard, right? Where everyone knows exactly where they stand at every single moment, and they feel the progress, right? Because I think when you're looking at an agency on an annual basis, that's not how we work. We work on a daily basis, right? So it's really talking about the wins, making it personal, right? You can't motivate a large group unless you really understand the people that are within it, and just make sure they feel seen. Now, I'd be lying to you if I told you it was as easy. It's not, right? When you have 5 or 6 people in the room and you see them every single day for the same amount of time, that's when you can really move the needle quicker. But, you know, it's a difference between a jet ski and a cruise liner, right? You know, it takes a little bit longer to turn it. But once you do, I mean, you're cruising.
Yeah, love that answer, man. I think one of the biggest benefits I've seen, even though like there are so many people that never probably even talk to you, man, but they see you maybe in a regional town hall or something. They see the energy, they feel the energy, they understand, man. You're not BSing them. You're a true, real person, man. You have the same feelings. You have the same desires to win in some capacity, to get in zone, to grow, and their goal is the same exact thing. And they just got to do your part. And I think that's how we have run our organization, man. Like, I'm like, nobody cares about what other people are doing at this time. Like, your job today is, as a salesperson, is to make 25 cold calls and talk to 10 people. And if you can just do that, man, you check the mark for the other people. Then in the afternoon, you can go see how you can help the team because you did your part. And now it's your time to go and see if other people need help. A couple of weeks for us to where like we have not hit our new business goal, right? And we just had a meeting at 9 o'clock, and that's why we started this 15 minutes later at 9:15, is because I wanted to be there. I wanted to be like, hey guys, listen, like our goal is 100. We're only 70% in, and we're supposed to be at 85% today. Guys, we're going to kind of rock and roll. And who's going to get up and wake up and help the whole team? It can't be you all the time. Even at 25 people, it can't be me. At 400 people, there's no way, man. You got these 7 other people that directly report to you that you have to like power up. And then those people kind of power up everybody else, which is kind of cool.
But to your point, it's a consistency though, right? Because if they're used to seeing you on Friday at 9 a.m. and you're delivering a consistent message, they're going to take it more seriously. And I think that that's a big part of what some leaders are missing. When things are going great, they show up. When things are going really poorly, they show up. But that 90% of the time in the middle, that's what the people are looking for. They want to know, you know, is it going the way that you expected? And what can we do to make it better? So you're absolutely right. I mean, you have to be present for it, and it has to be consistently.
Yeah, because Nebraska, man, around November-ish, middle of November, man, we have a 75-degree day today, which never happens, and you're used to 75-degree days every day, so don't even get me started. But, you know, it's one of those, man, an afternoon, man, it's going to be beautiful. It's a perfect golf afternoon. But I'm like, no, man, like, there's no golf today because the team is not where we need to be, so we're going to make some cold calls this afternoon and get to our goal, right? I think that's what a lot of people don't understand. That's what builds culture. That's when the leaders up top are, like, coming down. That's what builds culture, and everyone's like, man, he's got my back, I've got his back, which is kind of the model.
How serious are you if you're telling them things are not good and then they know where you are,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You have the ability to do it. This is your shop, right? But they know that you're in the trenches with them when it matters. And if you're not, then you can't complain when later they don't take you seriously.
So talk to me about, so from all the producers that are listening right now, man, I'm curious, right? So for producers that are listening right now that maybe do are on our commercial side, I guess two or three different layers to it. So think about a producer that's on the personal line side, like our agency, for example. We want to get into the commercial side of things. We want to understand that piece of it. We can't just go directly to middle market. I feel like that'd be really, really tough, right? Like we kind of have to deal with the small stuff, get ourselves ready to do it, get in, then get to the lower market, then get to the middle market. So as you see, there are producers like us kind of have these levels that you kind of have to obviously go up, right? So what's your advice to those people, man, that are trying to get into it, haven't really had a lot of legs, right? Whether it's lower middle market going to upper little market, whether it's the people like us that are trying to get into the commercial side, what would be your advice to those producers listening on this podcast, man? How can they get it rocking and rolling? Because to you, man, $700,000-$800,000, like, ah, that was a good year or whatever, a couple of years. But like to other people, that's their dream, right? So how do they accomplish those dreams?
So it's a great question because I think that this industry is trending towards it, right? Whether you're a producer, you're an agency owner, whether you work for one of the top 10s, that's always the mindset of how do we go upstream. But when I specifically going from personal lines to middle market, you know, first it's the reality that middle market, I think people have the impression that middle market's harder. It's really not. It's just you have to be significantly more disciplined. So it's first and foremost, it's a different language and you need to learn it, right? One of the first things that I did was, you know, I was recruited while I was in college to go into sales. And I was one of those guys that said, I'll take a year and I'll come back. And I never did. So I had the chip on my shoulder of I need to get educated so people take me seriously. So one of the first things I did while I was doing the middle market production, doing that $700,000-$800,000, I got my CPCU, not because anyone told me I should, but because I needed it for me. I'm not using it right now, Cyrus. It's collecting dust, right? But I needed to feel confident to be able to deliver some of this message and frankly, compete with the other middle market producers that are out there that have been doing this way longer than I have, right? So learn enough to be dangerous. Spend time with the experienced producers because they're out there and they're willing to take your calls, right? So that's number one. Number two, you know, you need to pick a lane. I feel like personal lines is very broad. And you can chase everything, whereas middle market really rewards getting into a niche or just general specialization. So, you know, pick one or two industries to start, become their go-to person, learn to speak the client's language, not yours, right? So you really start sounding like a partner rather than someone that's trying to sell them something, right? So that would be number two. Another thing that I think a lot of people struggle with and they don't realize is that middle market deals take time. Okay. You need to start building a real pipeline early. And that means that when, you know, in those first 6 months, you might not sell anything, but if you're not building that pipeline early, you're going to panic. It happened to me. I remember when I was at USI as a producer, my first year, 6 months in, I had it was full blown panic. I'm telling my wife, you know, she had just given birth to our first daughter who's 10 years old now. And I was in a full blown panic. And what I realized is that you have to stay consistent, right? The deal flow will start hitting. And once it does, and you continuously feed that pipeline, it gets really big, really quickly. And lastly, you know, don't overthink it. I mean, if you're a personal lines producer right now, you've got a certain amount of book that you can start talking to and figuring out, especially with higher net worth insurance buyers, how they make their money. You know, get out there, start making the phone calls. You learn commercial lines, you really learn it by being in the market. So like make those calls, meet the owners, walk in. I ended up in waste and recycling because I was walking around an industrial area, Opa-locka, for those of you guys that are from Miami, in Miami, and I saw a yard with big trucks, and my naive brain said big trucks equals big premium. And I started digging into that little niche and it paid off. So it's way simpler than I think people expect it to be, but it requires a level of discipline where in personal lines, you know, you and I talk about it all the time. It sells something every day, right? Or some of your team members sell four or five things every day with the way that they're performing. But in commercial lines, it's the consistency. Keep going, keep chipping at it, and it will happen.
Yeah, 100%. I think no matter what you do, man, build a pipeline is like literally the foundation of being in sales. Like if you don't have a pipeline, I mean, you're obviously not going to generate anything because you got to have a pipeline. And it's funny, man, the snowball effect, like once you have a couple under your belt, you're like, oh, another one came. Oh, another one came. It just kind of turns into, but you know, I feel like the world, man, and it kind of tests you. They always puts you into positions to be like, is this really for me? Do I really want to do this? And you know what I'm saying? And the ones that are great, man, have to get over that hurdle, have to get to the other side of it to see greatness, which is kind of cool. Yeah.
And I think especially people that go into shops that already have middle market producers, you're surrounded by people that are so wildly successful. And you start picking up habits that they might have now that they're successful, right? I mean, like you mentioned, I would love to be golfing right now. I'm in Dallas. It is 75 degrees. But the reality is that when you're building something, you have to have that discipline to kind of keep it going. And so you're absolutely right. It's just keep it going. If I could tell you one thing, that's it.
Yep, 100%. Curious, man. In 1 year, your best producing year, what was the revenue generated by you to the company? If you can give me a ballpark, like what do you?
No, it's $425,000.
In revenue.
That's yeah, amazing. And that was six accounts.
So the whole year, you wrote six accounts and it generated $425,000 in revenue.
Yeah, and that was my second year as a true middle market producer. And that's like I said, that was after, you know, the first 6 months of feeling like I had nothing going on. It was all six of those accounts were originally called the year prior. And that's after losing two of them that I swore, you know, the deal, right? I swear I'm going to win it. And at the last minute, I don't. But yeah, 425, that was my best year.
Best year on the revenue side. That's wild. Six accounts. To tell somebody, you're like, oh, yeah, six accounts. I did six accounts. They're like, oh, you probably golf like 80 to 100 days a year. You know, that's what it looks like. But no, man, like
right. You're
building a pipeline. And that's what the middle market is about, man. It's not like personal lines. You can't win every day in middle market, man. And you just and you got to almost have to like learn to lose. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, because you're going to have an opportunity again. One of the things that's very different, I think, from personal lines is that I think middle market accounts are much more open to at least taking a look on a yearly basis. Because you typically have people in the company that's their actual job. And when you're in lower middle market, when you're in personal lines, there's no one dedicated to shopping this insurance, right? It's the actual homeowner that's shopping it. And they don't want to go through this process again in 6 months, right? When you're in lower middle market, it's the owner that's handling it. And they have 100 other things to worry about. So it's you got to learn to lose, because if you can't burn on the way out. You're going to have next year, you're going to have another opportunity, or maybe not, maybe it's 5 years down the road, but it's a long play. And if you maintain that focus of losing with grace and learning from it, win or learn, right? It'll pay off for sure in the long run.
Yeah. So the middle market, that's why you niche. And I'm assuming some of these people that you're like, hey, you can pick some of those habits from the people that have been doing it for 10 years. Because they're not doing the same thing that you need to be doing in year one, right? So what I'm thinking, I'm like, okay, so I'm just realistically thinking, okay, so if you're niching, like if you're just basically the recycling thing, that the waste and recycling thing you're talking about, those people know other people who are doing the same thing. I think the owners, right? So if you do a really good job, and that's kind of what I'm thinking, how the niche kind of starts, because you're doing a couple of them, then they talk to other ones, and you build a good relationship with them. And they essentially that kind of, right? I mean, you're like, hey, go call John Doe, man. I just did his account. Talk about the experience with him and then call me, right? Like I'm assuming something like that, maybe not.
Yeah, no, you're right on the money, because it becomes a true partnership. And I know that sounds really hippy dippy, but it really is true in that middle market space, because when you find an underwriter that trusts your submissions and is willing to work with you within the range, right? Lower middle market, personal lines, there's no range. The rate is the rate is the rate. Sometimes you get a couple of favors here and there. Middle market has ranges where an underwriter has the ability to write it on the low end or the high end. Once they start trusting you, they keep going towards the low end, not to mention you're saving time because you're not scouring the market to figure out what carrier can do it. On the flip side of that, buyers trust each other in the same space. And yes, there's always the anomaly of the one guy that says, don't tell anyone we work together. And you got to respect that, right? At the end of the day, you got to, you know, show that confidentiality. You have that fiduciary duty, whatever. But they hang out together. They go to the same trade shows. They go to the same conferences. They go to the same award shows. They have the same extracurricular activities. And what you have to do is really ingrain yourself both from the carrier angle, where now you live in that space with that underwriter, and from the buyer's perspective, which is this is who you are now. You're not an insurance guy. You're a waste and recycling guy that happens to provide an insurance solution. And to this day, these guys are buddies of mine. They've sold to PE, they've grown companies, bought companies, and you know, it's nice to know that they see you as a partner and friend to a certain point. It doesn't make it easier, but it certainly allows you to move quicker once you've penetrated into that space.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I think that completely makes sense. Honestly, the middle market space, once you kind of get into it, I would bet it'd be pretty tough to actually leave. I know so many producers. Omaha is an insurance hub, man. We got some of the larger insurance companies that are here. And there's some agents that I know that are like 60 years old, but have been doing it for 40 years. And they, you know what I'm saying? And like, they just kind of have this, like, they just rely on the renewals essentially and stuff. But that's what you're saying, man. Like, you can't be the first year middle market and expect those, you know, expect the same things that those guys are doing.
And I would tell you that there were some producers when I started that did strike gold right off the rip. The amount of those that really, that just fell apart quickly because they expected that every single year, it's crazy. So yeah, it's not going to be immediate success. And look, if it is, go get them. Just keep that going, right? But just expect that once it does happen, to your point, it's tough to leave because like it has its own gravity at that point. And it's just a matter of continuing to build it and then, you know, not getting comfortable. Because to your point, there's so many retired in place producers. And look, they're making good money. If you're a producer and you got a shop that's paying you 20 to 25% on your renewals and you got a $2 million book of business, listen, if you're happy with $400,000 or $500,000 a year, more power to you. But, you know, I was surrounded by producers that had 10, 15, $20 million revenue books of business that they had teams that were larger than my office when I first started. And that's inspirational. That's when you realize you're in a different league.
Yeah, that's definitely a different game, man. I remember one of my good friends owns a nurse staffing company. There's two of them, and it became pretty large in 2020, 2021, man, when obviously staffing companies just blew up, right? Like I had a bunch of my friends making literally $600,000 to $1 million. And these are 30-year-olds, young 30-year-olds, because obviously it was the hospitals needed nurses, man. And they were basically just like killing it, dude. And they go buy all these houses and they buy all these cars and I'm insuring all these things. And I'm like, wow, this is wild.
What am I doing wrong?
Yeah, like, dude, are you serious? Right? And it's funny, man. Like, obviously, now in the last 2 or 3 years, they've been in a very, very downtrend. And some of them lost those houses, some of them lost those cars because they're like, they go from making $600,000 to $1 million down to making $120,000. It's like, dude, I can't pay my bills. They're doing like Uber, they're doing other things, other jobs. They have to because like they're not making the same amount of money as they're making. I see that. I would imagine something like that in the insurance space probably happens as well, to where there's comes a year where you're doing this thing. That's the beauty of the renewal side. Obviously, you're still going to get some of it, but you cannot be comfortable, man. You got to keep grinding.
Well, and look, you're on the money. Even if you do things perfectly, the middle market average retention is 90%. So even if you think you're doing everything exactly right, you're losing 10% of your book. And as that book gets larger, if you're a $10 million book, you're losing $1 million in revenue a year. So I'm big on that. You're growing or you're dying. Whether you like it or not, there's no such thing as cruising and maintaining a book, right? I mean, it's constantly bringing on, rounding out accounts, bringing on new accounts, working with their buddies that are growing as well. But yeah, I've seen it. I think once people get a little complacent, it's downhill from there.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know how you guys lose $500,000 revenue accounts and like still be able to go to sleep. Like I lose yesterday. I had a
no. You don't sleep. You don't sleep. Yeah, open a couple of beers and hope that you know you survive the night at that point.
Okay. That makes me feel good to hear, man. Because yesterday I got a cancellation. Somehow it came to my desk or whatever and to my email, and I had forwarded it to Maggie. I just looked at it real quick. I'm like, oh, person leaving a home and auto, like a $4,000 account. I'm like, why would you leave me? Like, what are you talking about? It made me mad. And Maggie's like, relax. I was like this, and this. I'm like, so she had to calm me down. I'm like, I don't like it. You know, so I couldn't imagine losing a $500,000 account. I would lose my mind.
Yeah, but look, that's what makes a good producer, right? Actually caring about the wins and caring about the losses and understanding why. Because if you just brush it off and you just go, you know what? It's fine. Who cares? You didn't learn anything from it.
Yes.
So at the very least, you know, those debrief meetings are important, right? And you don't want to. You don't want to call this client that just fired you, right? They don't see it that way, but that's what they did. But you would be surprised about how open and how willing to share their experience a lot of these buyers are, number one. And number two, the fact that you made that phone call, they're going to give you a shot again. But yeah, it's tough. I've had a couple of these meetings where I call them begrudgingly and I got to swallow my pride a little bit and go, tell me why I'm so bad that you got rid of me. But it pays off.
It sure does. Well, even that yesterday, man, I'm like, okay, listen. So I dig deep into it. Like just because like if it comes to my desk, I'm like, I'm curious. Because maybe this is a good lesson for us as a team, right?
Sure.
And I dig into it. I'm like, okay, so they went with Geico because it was like, it came from Geico 1-800 number cancellation. I'm like, we have Geico. I was like, call the client. I was like, just tell them, say, hey, listen, like we have Geico. You get an agent. You pay the same price essentially or close. I'm like, why? It doesn't make any sense. It's not the right thing for the client to go directly to Geico. And, you know, so I sent it to one of the producers. One of the producers is like, oh, yeah, we shopped him around with Progressive and it just wasn't priced or whatever. They went somewhere else. And then I was like, whoa, time out. I was like, they went with Geico. We have Geico. You call the client. You tell the client we have Geico, even though they've already canceled. Like, let's give this a shot. And then we use that as a learning experience, how to handle cancellations. A lot of big firms like Endzone, man, they're giving you 20%. You have skin in the game now, man. You can't just be like, oh, they canceled Geico. We'll see you later. No, man, there's got to be a process. How do you win these people back and all these things that you have to do? And that's why a lot of big, larger companies, like you said, give 20% renewal to the producer. So you've got skin in the game. And it should hurt just like it hurt me. It should hurt the producer as well.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. And that's a big part of it, right? Especially, look, there's a reason why I came on board here with Endzone, just like same thing for you, right? I want someone that's going to feel the hurt, right? And long term, it's a net positive. And I get why some agency owners say, no, you know, I'll pay them up front. They already get a salary and all of that. But a producer that loses an account and it directly impacts their pocket, right? It makes a difference. And the example that you use, you got buddies going from 600,000 to 120, you know, 120 is still a great amount of money, right? It's six figures, for God's sake, but it's that drop that hurts. And if you can get producers to have some skin in the game in it, they're going to make that additional phone call. They're going to make they're going to ask for the business to return. They're going to feed that into their pipeline for next year as well. And it makes a huge difference. It's you've got people that have a vested interest in the agency's success rather than just an interest in taking.
Yeah, if you don't learn how to lose, man, and care, this is not going to be a long term. It's not going to be the right career, in my opinion, for you, man. Losing's got to hurt, man. Losing's got to hurt, no matter whether you have money leaving your pocket or just as a competitor, man. Like, losing sure hurt. Nobody wants to lose. And I feel like the people that have a hard time with losing in some capacity are going to be pretty successful in this industry, because then you're going to try and make your process better after and learn every time, which is how we have kind of built it, and obviously you as well. So,
yeah. And look, it's so easy to focus on when everything's going well, right? The guy that goes golfing, the guy that, mm-hmm. you know, can take 3 weeks for the holidays. but they don't see the part that hurts. And I think it's important. You have to know that you're either going to win the account or you're going to learn from why you didn't win it. And if you have that mindset, yeah, man, I mean, this is a phenomenal industry. I couldn't leave it even if I wanted to.
Exactly. Well, I want to talk a little bit about Endzone, man. Obviously, Endzone is doing some amazing things, man. For people that maybe don't know Endzone, for people that maybe just talk about the growth really quick, man, if you could, from a market president standpoint, a regional president standpoint, like give me a little bit of like, okay, for people that don't know about Endzone.
Sure. So, look, I'll focus really in the over the last year, right? So I came on board January of this year. So rounding out my first 12 months. And when I came on board, the Midwest region was right around 20 some odd million in revenue. We're going to close out the year around 80 million. And the vast majority of that has been bringing partners on that are looking to take their agencies to that next level, that all want to have some skin in the game, because we're really big on merging with agencies that have founders that are going to remain with us and are going to continue driving it. And really, it's a true value proposition of, you've already got a fire burning, we're just going to throw some kerosene on it. One of the things that I was most excited about when I first started speaking with Endzone and I was considering making this change, is that the guys that run it, I mean, these are insurance guys. These aren't some finance guys that ended up looking at an agency and seeing how can we squeeze money out of it. Every single person on that team has sold an account, has lost an account, has serviced an account, has gone to a carrier meeting, has gone to the networking events, the whole nine yards. There's something to be said about that. And then lastly, it's the focus that we have. Middle market is awesome. That will always be my first love, if you will. But the reality is that the insurance industry has ignored Main Street America for a very long time because they didn't want to do the work that came with providing the additional ammunition and resources that they need to continue to grow. So you know this. And the majority of brokers out there, if you get a partner with them, they go, well, we're going to centralize you to the nearest large city. And now you have minimums that you can produce. And they start cutting people. We don't do that, man. I mean, we find an agency that's a good partner. We're going to keep running it the way they've been doing it. There's always changes, right? You're going to have an Endzone logo in the front. And you're going to have a different agency management software, whatever have you. But giving these owners the ability to be part of something bigger, to be able to scale faster, and to continue servicing their clients the way their clients want to be serviced, in person, at the same location they've been, being able to walk in and talk to someone, it's something special, man. And the growth is, I think, is a good testament to that. And look, the investment community is noticing. So it's a great, it's fun. I could not be happier that I made this jump. I think it's a company that, as a company, we're barely getting started. So we cleared the top 30, which is great. Size is always fun to talk about, right? In terms of our top 100 brokers. I can't wait to see, where this goes in the future.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. And what's really cool about Endzone, man, you're kind of in this trajectory of kind of like just taking off in some capacity. Obviously it's taken off. I mean, obviously top 30, you don't become top 30 by not completely kind of taking off, but like, you're still kind of in this place where like, man, this is about to take off, man. And the agencies that want to be a part of that in some capacity, that want to come on, man, maybe want to take a look at it, because it's going to be pretty fun, man, for all of us to kind of go essentially to the top together. And you said it, man, the people, you know, I obviously know Chris and some of these people at the top, Pat and them, man, they're just great, great people. So have a conversation with them if you guys are interested. But coming back to you, my man, a couple more questions. We'll get you off real quick. So, I know you got a 10-year-old daughter, man. I got a 9-year-old daughter. What's the one lesson, man, that she's taught you? I know that's your first, and that was my first as well.
It's easy. You got to be present. I did not realize how important it is for her just to feel heard. Okay, and Cyrus, it's usually nonsense, uh-huh, right? It's a 10-year-old girl. I'm learning about the newest Netflix animated show, and It's anime. I've never seen it in my life, right? But now I know it, right? And it's incredible that just by prioritizing what's important to her, she's learning how important that is. I get home now and she asks me about my day.
Nice.
And she remembers everyone's name. She knows where I traveled to, what agencies there are. So just being present, man. It's they just want to be heard. And then obviously don't give in all the time.
Yeah.
That one's more telling myself, man, I give in all the time. But, you know, they're only 10 years old once. At some point, they're not going to want to hang out with me.
I got two boys. I've got my daughter, man. There is a different love. It's just different. I can't describe it, dude. There is no like way of me describing my relationship with my daughter. It's just very, very different than the two boys and my wife, like than any other relationship I've ever had. It's one of the most special things in the world.
And if you care about their stuff, they care about yours.
100%.
It's so funny because, you know, you mentioned it earlier. We moved from Miami to Dallas and, you know, I tell her, well, we're watching a Cowboys game. And she's like, is that like the Dolphins? And like immediately she starts connecting the two. So yeah, it's fun. Cool. It's fun to have a little hangout, buddy.
Cool, man. That's cool. Two last questions. First one is greatness, man. In some capacity, you've done some great things. You're doing some great things. You're about to do more great things. What's the definition of greatness to you?
It's doing the right thing every single day. I think that's the hardest part, right? Because we know what we're supposed to do.
Uh-huh.
And I think as leaders, I think we do a good job of looking at someone else's life, right? And their day-to-day and telling them what they should be doing. But I think it's really tough to kind of do that ourselves. So look, it's corny, right? But you know, I'm sure it's from some movie that my daughter's made me watch,
mm-hmm.
but it's doing that next right thing. Whatever's coming up, do the right one. And those little things build on each other. And before you know it, you're looking back and it's been 2 years down the road and you got an $800,000 book of business.
Yeah.
And the right thing usually doesn't feel good. The wrong thing is usually easier and has a more immediate reward behind it. So it's every single day, make the correct decision in the small ones. We focus on the big ones. I think people talk about that all the time, right? What was your major fork in the road?
Uh-huh.
It's not one. There's dozens of them every single day. Did you wake up at the time you said you were going to? Did you get the exercise in that you said you were going to do? Did you wrap up your day at the right time because your kids have that thing you promised them? Did you show up to the client the way that you said you were going to? And those little decisions, that's the greatness, man. The result is there. And everyone focuses on that, right? But I always compare it to like the professional athlete. Not me, but other people, right? And everyone loves to talk about like, man, how lucky are they? No, the hell they're not. They were playing baseball at 6 years old, right? And they did it at 7 and at 8 and at 9 and the tournaments and the travel. And what we're seeing is the result.
Yes.
And we go, man, that person's lucky. No, the hell they're not. They were consistent and they made the next right decision. So if you want to be great, do the next right thing for what you're trying to accomplish. It's the little decisions.
Dude, I love that. I don't think people realize, man, obviously with what happened to the Dallas Cowboys player, like, dude, they're dealing with the same crap you're dealing with. Money can't solve all those things, man. It cannot. It's just pretty powerful. Win the day, man. I'm a big win the day guy. I got to do one or two things every day for me to win my day. If it was one thing for you, what would it be? You have to do this every day.
I will not go a single day without, at the very least, a FaceTime with my wife and my kids. Every single day. And it's easy not to. When you're traveling, right? You know, my wife is busy with the girls. She's got her own real estate portfolio that she's handling. It's easy to kind of disconnect. But I'm really big on if you take away that family foundation, I don't know what I would be. It wouldn't be this. I'll tell you that. So for me, the win every single day is I will not go a single day without at the very least a face-to-face with my wife and my kids.
Love that. Dude, one of my favorite episodes. I appreciate you, my man. Thanks for being on. Anything else you want to share to the audiences before we leave?
No, that's it, man. Look, what I will tell you is I practice what I preach in being accessible. I'm easy to find. Reach out. You want to bounce ideas off of someone. That's something I've always appreciated. I've got people throughout my career that to this day I can call and I know I'm going to get some real feedback. I'm not going to tell you what you want to hear, but I make myself accessible to it. I just think it's such a great industry. We're underrepresented. We need to keep growing it. So my door is always open. And thanks for having me, man. We made it work. This is good.
Work, dude. Francisco, I appreciate you, man. Go make some cool stuff happen, and we'll see you next time. Appreciate you.